It's a Friday afternoon, and we are sitting in a rather glorious but creative space here in Oxford. I'm in a hive of innovation and data, innovative data. I'm sitting in the offices of the Oxford Information Labs for Navuna Business Finance, and we're going to have a chat with Mark, who's one of the founders and directors of the business, and we're going to talk about sustainability and people. Mark, a few words on the journey of this amazing business.
Yep, so we've been operating for around 20 years or so now, and we started out very much sort of two or three people. In fact, I was the first employee.
Were you?
I was indeed, yep. And there were two other directors at that point. And we've kind of grown, I suppose, fairly organically over the last few years, but particularly in the last sort of two or three years. And we're now around about sort of 15 to 20 of us in total.
So your first payroll printout was quite small, one person.
Pretty much, yeah. Although I think probably the directors were also on the payroll, yeah. But yeah, a small. Yeah, yeah, it was definitely small beginnings. Yeah.
Now, yesterday I had the privilege of meeting some of your young talents and some of the people that you mentor, and you spoke very passionately about the growth and sustainability of the business, often being as strong as its people and the way you connect and inspire your people. Tell us how important the people aspect, the people talent aspect of sustainability is in terms of being a sustainable business. Sorry, overused the word there.
I think it's absolutely paramount, Guy, to be honest. I mean, I think, you know, people are the lifeblood of your business in every sense. When you're smaller, as we are, then I think, you know, you by nature, you invest more in people. You demand more of people. People inevitably have more of a contribution in a smaller environment. And therefore, you know, when somebody chooses to move on, I think I used an analogy earlier on, you know, it's like a limb's being cut off. And unlike bigger businesses where you can, you know, you can have more of a sort of sense of coming and going, it's much more of a challenge for smaller businesses. So therefore, incredibly important to be sustainable.
And how do you keep them? How do you keep people?
I think a lot of it's about playing to people's strengths. And, you know, as a manager, my sort of key position is that, you know, you want people to be doing what they enjoy as much as possible. You want people to be doing things that bring them life and that, you know, things that are going to be satisfying for them, but also things that are going to lead to them being successful. And I think there's nothing worse than somebody, you know, having both a boring job and also a sense that within that they're not actually achieving. You want the opposite. You want people to be sort of enjoying their job but also seeing success in what they do.
Now, obviously, without getting political, we have a new government and lots of talk about growth and sustainability and net zero and stuff. You're a business, which we'll come on to in a minute, is growing exponentially with a big international footprint, which is something I'm sure you're very proud of. When you think of sustainability as a business, I mean, we mentioned people. What things matter to you? Because the thing I notice when I've been up at different intervals is this force of continuity, the same people building on projects. So it is that stability, which I think is the foundation of your growth, and that is sustainability. But what things matter to you as a business leader?
So, yeah, I think there is a definite need for, you know, there to be sort of continuity of, I guess, vision for what we're doing. I think, you know, one of the biggest challenges when you're small is to sort of keep that sense of direction. I think stability in terms of your staff and for them to actually, you know, continue to believe that you're in control, that everything's good, and actually trying to keep that, I wouldn't say it's an illusion, but trying to ensure that the staff sort of know that you're behind them. And so actually having that sense of continuity, and some of that's, I think, driven by vision. I think a lot of it's about having a clear vision of what you're trying to achieve as a business, and and therefore, you know, even if things get tough, maybe cash flow is tight for a bit, that if that vision is sustained, then you know that and they and your staff know that actually you're on a journey, you're not sort of just going in you know, random directions.
And the question I have to ask, how I guess the challenge for a small business is you create talent to invest in your own future, and then when they get good, it's maybe hard sometimes, particularly with younger ones, to keep them, because the big companies have maybe always got more toys to throw at people. So that must be a challenge for a small business. If you're investing in sustainability of people and investment in people and creating a nice work condition, then the challenge is, how do we hang on to them?
Yeah, I think you've got to work harder as a small business on that. I think, you know, ironically, you need to pay well. Yeah. Simple as that. You need to pay well. You need to pay above the going rate for the area you're in, and to keep people. Crude as that might sound, the other side of it is, I think that you do need to provide opportunities for people to naturally acquire leadership positions within your business. I think if people own aspects of the business, they have a sense of leadership, then they will be more inclined to stay. I think, you know, in bigger companies, you're more likely
to be more involved, you're saying.
I think so. Yeah, I think there's a sense of leadership and involvement. And I think for younger people, if they feel they've got a section of the business that's theirs to kind of shape and be involved in, they're more likely to stay with you. Yeah. And be less tempted away by other opportunities and bigger opportunities, maybe. I think also, you know, there's a reality, and I think one thing we discussed informally earlier on is that there's a kind of often a returning culture as well, and that people will go and try the big businesses out and then discover that they're a small cog in a big machine and not particularly you know, useful or seemingly important, and will then come back to you. So there's a sense of, like with your own children, sometimes you have to let people go and try things out and see the other side. But I think there's something inherently attractive about smaller businesses for younger people.
The grass is not always greener.
No, far from it. And I think you're right, it's hard sometimes to communicate that to young people without them going and seeing that for themselves. But I think if you can, I think the things you can do are, as I mentioned, are to try and give people that sense of ownership in aspects of the business.
So the grass isn't greener. I mean, the other thing with sustainability is obviously green stuff. Now, in your business, things like that, I mean, I know you're heavily into data and consultancy. Where do green influences and conscious thoughts come from? Does it come from colleagues? Does it come from children at home? Does it come from industry? When you're thinking about some of the, I notice you recycle a lot in the room we've just been in. Where do those thoughts come from as a small business?
I think, you know, maybe in the UK we've got more of a sort of built-in sense of green, because as a country we've kind of got to a point where recycling is a norm, which is great. So there's things like recycling of rubbish, which is an obvious thing. I think when it comes to eco considerations in the tech world, it's a very interesting argument about that. And I think we were going to do a study a while ago on eco-tech, which is a really interesting study about how much you know, consumption there is in doing things like, you know, sending an email or, you know, sending text messages and those kind of things, and looking at comparative figures there. And it's very interesting when you look at that. But actually, I think there is a remit on tech generally in our sector to be greener. I think, you know, we rely heavily on cloud providers for our data centres these days.
And they have big warehouses.
They do. And some of those are greener than others, frankly. And I think, you know, there is a corporate responsibility, I think, to be green where you can. One thing that we've become better at over the last few years is recycling and upcycling of equipment.
Yeah, okay.
And that's the thing that we've...
And is it something... I mean, it's different in every industry, but is it something... Because obviously you pitch for government and major global clients. Is it something that's on their shopping list in terms of supply chain? Do they ask questions about your sustainability credentials, whether it's people, whether it's ethics, whether it's financial sustainability, whether it's net zero, all the aspects? Are there sometimes questions asked when people are looking at you as a business on how well you tick those areas?
I think it's unusual to get questions around our sort of eco-sustainability, in honesty, but I think it's very common to be... It's very common to be asked questions about financial stability when looking at contracts. I think there are some contracts, obviously, where they expect your business to be operating at a certain turnover level, and lots of public sector contracts operate on that basis, which is, I guess, safeguarding them in the process. But I think, yes, I mean, it's something that we have to be constantly aware of. And also, I think in terms of contracting, having, you know, our eggs in many baskets is better for the business as well. So that's always important.
Well, look, to finish, we should have done it at the start, but we're going to do it as the grand finale of this conversation. For people listening, for businesses listening, maybe your next customer listening, tell listeners a little bit about Oxford Information Labs and the work you do.
So Oxford Information Labs is an IT consultancy. We've been operating for 22 or 3 years now, so fairly established. We have, over the years, tackled many different IT problems, but I guess over the last 10 years or so, have focused in on what is the sort of the internet space, really. And so we're experts in how internet technology work. We're experts in the analysis of data around that. And consequently, our focus over the last 2 or 3 years has been in that space, but particularly in the space of online abuse and tackling online abuse. So that's where we
for the business. Domain name system and scams.
That's
and
right. Yeah.
And do big businesses need help with that?
Absolutely. I think the whole world needs help with that, frankly. Okay. Guy, I think we need to, you know, as an entity, our whole purpose is to sort of get the data out there so that people can be made aware of the problems, to bring to light those actors that could be doing more to tackle online crime. Many people are not aware of how the online crime starts, and also not aware of who the key actors are who facilitate this sort of online scam stuff. And it's trying to bring those to light, trying to help people when they're looking at their own supply chains to choose responsibly and to think about who they might be using as well.
I suppose in some ways that could be a new strand of the word sustainability for big businesses, is protecting their customers and making sure they are tech sustainable in terms of having the right controls and protocols in place to protect their customers from online criminals and scammers, perhaps.
I agree with you. I think cyber crime is on the rise. Yeah. I think every business is affected by it in some way, whether it's their individual employees who are affected personally, or whether it's as a corporation they're affected. I mean, it's more and more common now to be seeking, you know, cybercrime insurance as part of your package, and it's one of the biggest risks you have if you have any sort of online exposure as a business. So it's increasingly important to be vigilant, to have the measures in place, to be, in my opinion, you know, whether you're a tech company or just a connected company, to have things like security testing in place, to have your systems tested to make sure that you're not vulnerable to those kind of attacks.
But your business, I mean, the thing is, and your co-founders, we're very modest. You know, you're a team of 20 or 30 people here, and you work not only for governments, but you work for some of the biggest brand names there are in the world. I won't shout them all here because there's probably a degree of confidentiality, but, you know, some of the biggest brands there are from the States and globally are coming to you for help as a small business, a beautiful but small business in Oxford. How does that make you feel? Because that's pretty special. You're not sort of in Canary Wharf or something. You're a small business here, very friendly. I've seen you sit round a table and break bread and share lunch together, but yet you go back to work and you're on the phone or online to decision makers from some of the world's biggest brands. How does that make you feel, given you were one of the first people in?
I think it's very exciting. I think it's great to be able to work with the big names. I think more than anything for me, it shows that we're having influence and you know, we're working for the greater good. Yeah. And, you know, I think, you know, whilst lots of the large tech companies have huge in-house resources, they have the ability to do lots of things, often it's harder for them to position themselves appropriately in the market to tackle some of the problems that we're able to tackle because they're too big, because in many cases there's an element of trust issues with, you know, with some of those companies. I think our position increasingly as a not-for-profit entity in the middle has helped us establish a base where we can work fairly freely with these people.
Right. Well, Mark, it's been inspiring hearing your story. It's been inspiring hearing how you have progressive views towards financial strength and people development, and you're leading your markets here from Oxford. Thanks for joining us on the podcast.
No problem. Thank you, Guy.